This morning, we're going to look at Ephesians 5, verses 15 through 17. We're going to come back to that a couple of different times. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read both. I'm going to add the King James Version in with the NIV because it translates the one verse slightly different. But when you add them together, I think it is kind of helpful. So starting Ephesians 5, verse 15. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Without all the added things going on that we had going on this year, this time of year, the holiday season can be crazy. There's gifts to buy, there's places to go, people to see, people to visit, all those things coming up. It's, you know, the end of the tax year. You start hearing those commercials about get that last tax donation in so you can write it off and, you know, stick it to the government. just all those last minute things you're trying to get done. But it's also a good time to stop and look back over the year. One of the things that I've missed out on this year is we haven't been able to do some of the traditional stuff that we normally do. We have a Christmas village we like to set up, I like to set it up anyway. I don't know how much Deanne really likes setting it up. But, we usually make these Christmas cookies that are my dad's grandma's recipe, but that we try to make every year. We didn't make those this year. And then there's this song. When I was in high school, I got this tape from the California Raisins Christmas tape that I've held on to for all these years. And I love listening to it every year. And this year, when I went to listen to it, it wasn't where I thought it was. Of course, we haven't moved that many times. So, you know, don't know where it could have gotten to. But the reason I like that particular tape is there's a song on it. And of course, in my notes, I neglected to put it on there. But I think it's called Merry Christmas, War is Over. And I didn't realize that that was actually the name of it until I got online to look up the lyrics. And originally, I guess John Lennon wrote it. So that was new to find out to me. But the line that gets me from the song is it says, "So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun." And even when I was younger, as I would listen to that, it would always kind of make me really think about kind of that time. And it's kind of a sobering question when you look at that. And it's somewhat depressing, depending on how the year has gone, or the fact that you haven't stopped to think about, you know, what you've been up to the whole year until that particular moment. And at the same time, it's kind of hopeful because, you know, a new year has begun. And you can just imagine all these possibilities that could happen in the new year. Another song that kind of has stuck out to me is a little more upbeat song. You know, I'm getting nothing for Christmas. You know, that's a good one. But it was what the one verse says. It says, "I won't be seeing Santa Claus. Somebody snitched on me. He won't come visit me because somebody snitched on me. Next year, I'll be going straight. Next year, I'll be good. Just wait. I'd start now, but it's too late. Somebody snitched on me." You know, the point is, hey, you know, I've already messed up this year. What's the point in starting now? Might as well put it off. So a little lighter look at it. But still comes to that conclusion that we've just started this new year. We're moving on. And we're starting to look at time and how we can make things right, how we can start over, we can begin fresh. And as I was looking at this idea of time, I came across this list of four things that explain, or at least that they felt, which I agree, makes time very precious. And I don't know that I've ever really stopped to think about why time is important or why time is precious, but it's pretty obvious when you look at this list that I came across. He goes backwards. So there's four things. So number four, once time is passed, it cannot be recovered. Once it's happened, you can't go back and fix it. As much as we'd like to sometimes be able to go back and fix something, we can't. Number three, we are uncertain of its continuance. We know we have time right now, but who knows what the next moment is going to bring. We have no guarantee how long we're going to be here. Number two, our time is very short. It is scarce, and there never seems to be enough of it, which definitely, during this time of the year, seems very true. As we're running around trying to accomplish all these things we'd like to do for the holidays, get that last Christmas card out, bake that batch of cookies, make sure we didn't leave anybody out. It just seems like we never have enough time, that we're always out of it. And then the last one, which he lists as most importantly, is that our time is precious because our eternity depends on how we use it. The way we use our time not only affects us here, but it'll affect us later. And so how we use it will affect our eternity. So as we're looking at this new year, and we're stopping, we're looking ahead to the possibilities, the New Year's resolutions always come up. They have their top 10 list. Whether we like resolutions or not, like a bad penny, it keeps turning back up. And so I thought we'd go ahead and take a look at the top 10 for 2011. Now actually, as I got looking at these, of course, I don't remember what the ones were last year. I mean, I don't know. Does anybody remember what New Year's resolutions they made last year? If you made any. So that might be a good note to self. Write down New Year's resolutions so next year, when it comes to this time, I can see if I actually accomplished anything. The ones they came up with, the number one was spending quality time with family and friends. That's a pretty good one. Number two, time for fitness. That's another good one. And then three, the battle of the bulge. Ah, yes. Losing some weight. That's always a... I don't think that's... Probably, I can't imagine that never being on a New Year's resolution list. Four, quit smoking. Another good thing. Five, enjoy life more. That sounds good. Number six, quit drinking. Okay. Number seven, get out of debt. That would be great. If anybody has extra money they want to help, no problem. Number eight, higher learning. It's always good to stretch the brain a little bit and get it working a little harder. Number nine, helping others. Another very good thing. And then the last one, number 10, getting organized. So I think there's definitely a couple on there I need to work on. But overall, I think that's a pretty good list. But the question is, how should we spend our time this new year? If you look at it, some people equate time to money for an illustration. That at the new year, it comes to the end of last year, and 2010, and our time is running out. We're out of time. And then now the new year has begun. Our bank account is now full again. We have a full account, and we just have all this time to spend. Well, not our actual bank account, but yeah. That would be nice, though. So now we have this new year of all these possibilities, all this time we can spend. But the question is, how are we going to spend it? Are these resolutions that made the top 10 list, are those enough? That those are good enough ways to spend our time? Is there other things we can do? What's a good way to spend our time? So let's jump back to Ephesians 5. Read those three verses again. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. All right. So, how can we not be foolish with the time that God's given us? If we go to Luke chapter 12, it's verses 15 through 23 is the scripture reference there. We find the rich man, who's built up these barns to store his wealth. He's got all this wealth coming in. He's like, oh, man, what am I going to do with all this stuff? Okay, I know. I'm going to build more barns, and then I'll fill those up, and then I'm going to kick back and take it easy because I've got everything under control, and I'm good to go. But God comes to him, and he says, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it is with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich toward God. Now, on one hand, you look at this and you think, well, the guy's just being smart. You know, you got some extra money, you got some extra stuff, why not store it up? Why not, you know, make for a good retirement plan? That only seems to make good sense, right? And I think the problem here comes in is the fact that he didn't check with God to see what he should be doing with his stuff. He was just focusing on himself, focusing on what he wanted to do. And he was happy with that. He was good. But what he didn't realize was he wasn't going to have the time to enjoy what he had set aside. Which also asks the other question, if he's doing all this work, he's all focused on his work, how much was he actually enjoying his family or his life at that point in time? Where was his focus at? Now, if we want to flip the coin over and flip ahead a couple, or forward a couple chapters in Luke to Luke chapter 15, it's verses 11 to 32 is where this takes place. We have the prodigal son. He goes to dad, says, okay, dad, I think it's time for me to head out on my own in the world, so I'll take my inheritance. You know, why don't you give it all to me now? I'm going to take off, do my own thing, and we'll be good. So he gets his money, he takes off, and of course we know what happens. He ends up spending all of his money. He wasn't afraid to store it up. He had no problems with storing his money. But then again, when it was all gone, he had nothing. He look at it again, say, well, is spending money bad? No, it's a lot of fun. I can vouch for that one. I know when Deanne was in the hospital for her surgery, when she was in surgery, I decided that I would occupy my time by doing some shopping, which wasn't necessarily the best idea. Because when you're trying to take your mind off of something else, it's easy to buy more things that you don't really need or that you, easy to spend money. But when he was spending all this money, there again, he's focused on himself. He wasn't necessarily asking God, hey, you know, what should I do with this money? Is this a good way to be spending my money? Or, you know, should I set a little aside? What should I do with it? So he's just out there. And so we kind of have these two different examples of one person who's focused on keeping and storing up and setting aside for the future, and you have this other person that's more focused on indulgence right now. I'm going to live for the moment, and if I don't, you know, tomorrow's whatever, you know. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry, and come whatever tomorrow comes. Of course, we know when he got to tomorrow, he went back home and said, hey, Dad, can I work for you, please? But neither of those things is really a good example of how we should spend our time. Because we can't store up the time we have to spend it each day. We don't really have a choice. From the time we started this day to now, there's no way of storing it up. There's no way of going back. So how can we best use our time now so that when it's all spent and gone, because eventually we're all going to run out of time here and end up in eternity. So how can we best spend our time here so that when we get there, we'll know we'll have spent our time wisely. Before we look at the last example I want to look at, while I was kind of browsing the internet, looking at this idea of time, I came across a couple different articles that kind of got me thinking on how different people view time. The first one, I'm just going to read exactly what it says, what he had in his paragraph here. He says, have you noticed how one of the marks of a great sportsman is that in the middle of a football game or with a fast bowler hurling cricket balls at them? I have no idea what cricket or hurling balls or any of that means. The football thing, I'm assuming he's talking about American football, but he's probably talking about soccer. Who knows? No, I know cricket's a sport. I know that much. But I have no idea what it looks like. Whereas football, you know, you've seen on TV and played a little here and there. But anyway, as these guys are out there playing the game, they seem to effortlessly find the time to deal with the situation. They just know where to be or what is coming and set themselves to meet it with all the time in the world when everyone else is in a fluster and a panic. Let's be super sportsmen in the Lord. We can find the time from God to be a fantastic performer for him. Now, I picked this out because there was these different kind of contrasts on time and how we use time. And what I thought was interesting is that even as this guy was talking about spending time and using it wisely, he had it focused down to this idea that, we're in the game and we're about ready. You know, if you're the quarterback, you're getting ready to throw the ball. You've got all these guys coming at you that are about ready to take you down. And so you've got to process all this information. And yet he's able to take all the time in the world to make his decision and throw it. Well, if you watched football, you know that they don't always have that much time. They end up getting tackled or they throw the ball away or whatever is going on. But it just seemed a little extreme to me to always think about ourselves as being in that moment where we're about to get tackled. We've got to make a quick decision because I know when I'm in those moments, I get wore out really, really fast. One of these times, because my quick thinking is not always there, and Deanne can vouch for this one. I had this fascination with these little camp stoves. They call them a penny stove, I believe is the name for it, or a hobo stove that you make out of aluminum cans. And you cut them, and then you put them together, and you put isopropyl alcohol in them. And that's what, it gets heated up, and then it forms a flame. And whatever. If you know what I'm talking about, you understand. If not, you're probably just looking at me like, okay, whatever. But anyway, isopropyl alcohol is involved, and it's very flammable. So I decided that I would try one of these out. So I built one, and I was, of course, wisely sitting at the kitchen table. yeah. Trying to test this out. And so I've got my isopropyl alcohol, and I'm pouring it in, and I light it. And I don't remember what happened, but somehow... something tipped over, and the alcohol is like rubbing alcohol. It's liquid, and it's running all over the table, and the flame is spreading. And I'm sitting there, a foot and a half away from it, watching this. And my wife, I don't even remember what she said, but she's like, "Do something." I'm like, "It'll be okay. It'll be okay." And I'm sitting there watching this flame take off on the table. It'll be okay. Meanwhile, she runs into the kitchen and grabs something, a towel or something, and comes back and puts it out. And I'm sitting there, it'll be okay. Needless to say, my quick thinking isn't always peak. And so I would hate to rely on that constant... I would hate to rely on that constantly to make good choices. So on one hand, our time can be viewed at very precisely in these very second by second. We can look at how we're using time second by second and making sure we're utilizing each second to make sure that we're squeezing the most out of the decisions we're making and how we're using time. We're just... Not something I want to be focused on because I know I'm going to end up not making the best decision. Now this other passage that I found, definitely I think gets us going in a little different direction, which I think I like a little bit better because it doesn't involve me setting anything on fire. Article that I came across. I just got one paragraph out of that I'm going to read as well. In this rat race of always being on the go, we are failing to grasp who we are, why we are here, and where we are really going. Now, I like that. I want to read that one more time. In the rat race of always being on the go, we are failing to grasp who we are, why we are here, and where we are really going. We are like the bus driver who told his passengers, "I have some good news, and then I have some bad news. The bad news is we took a wrong turn and are on the wrong road. But don't worry. The good news is we're making great time." It's as though the going itself, the movement at a fast pace, is its own reward. Regardless of where it takes us, we have become enamored with speed for the sake of speed itself. We want our computers to run with the speed of light. If it takes 10 seconds to save a 30-page file, we become impatient and we complain. We want it done in a split second. But doesn't it seem only logical that the traveler, if he is unsure of the route, should stop and ask where he is and where the present road is taking him, rather than continue on the same direction, regardless of his speed? There's so many times where I've found myself being in a hurry that once I get done, it's like, okay, what was kind of the point in getting here so fast anyway? Which it's kind of seems kind of counterintuitive for me, because my wife would say normally I take my time and pretty slow. I'd like to say it's my mind working fast, but apparently that's not the case. As we look, especially with technology and computers, the first computer that we had was an Apple IIe computer. Big 5 1/4-inch floppy disks that you stick in the drive and, you know, sit there and wait for it to boot up and whatnot. It's amazing how much faster our technology has evolved. And yet, we still don't have any more time than we had when we had the old Apple IIe's that were, you know, what, 256 color or whatever they were, maybe 16. We've come so far in how fast we're able to do things. But instead of taking time to enjoy life, we've incorporated more things to do. I think of myself, my computer at home, I thought it would be great to get a second monitor. So now I have two monitors on my home computer. One so I can be doing one thing, and a second one so I can be doing something else. And so I don't know that it, you know, makes a lot of sense, but it's supposed to speed up my productivity, right? So I can get things done faster. Well, all ends up happening is I'll be working on one side and I'll have music or a video playing on the other side, and then I get distracted. I was like, oh, hey, this looks like an interesting article. Let's go check that out. Oh, wait, I got to be doing this. Oh, there's something else over here. And you get distracted. You were so bent on going there faster that we lose our destination. We get all these side trails, distractions. So it ends up taking longer anyway. One of the things I've often thought about is ways to speed things up. I love Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The main character is this inventor. He's got all these crazy little gadgets. They got a remote control lawnmower for the yard. In the worst way, I would love to create a little remote control lawnmower. But I don't have the mechanical or engineering know-how to do that. They had the mail. You know, the dog got the mail, I think. No, it went through the tube, didn't it? Yeah. It was kind of like at the bank where you got the tube and it shoots up and through to the cashier. The mailbox kind of worked the same way. The postal worker puts it in and phew, into the house. They don't have to waste time to walk out to get their mail. I mean, you had all these little gadgets for breakfast, for cracking eggs, for feeding the dog, for everything. It's amazing. I was thinking, man, it would be so great, have everything automated. You know, I just get up in the morning and go through the thing, and my breakfast would be ready for me. You know, everything would be all set and done. And I was like, okay, well, then what would I do with my time? I don't know, I'm sure I would find something to do. A common phrase when you talk to people that have been retired, well, Robert, you know, you just retired, right? How much time do you have? None. No time. And how did you work before now? I look at that in my own life with working. I've had from anywhere from one job to I think I had four, maybe five while I was in transition at one time. Now I'm just back down to two, which I'm very thankful for. But it's still, we fill our lives with all these things because we're so set on getting there that we kind of lose track of where we were actually headed or what we were doing along the way. And it becomes very easy to get caught up in that trap because we see time more like this taskmaster that's constantly whipping us, saying, okay, go, move. You've got to get this done. You've got to get this done. And if you're not doing something that has some tangible benefit, then you've wasted your time. For our culture, time is definitely different than if you go to some other cultures where meditation is very important. For us to stop, if somebody were to tell us, oh, I'm going to take 20 minutes to go meditate or to go think about something for a while, we'd be like, why are you going to think about it when you can just go do it? The planning process is, we know, is important, but at the same time, if you're not accomplishing something while you're planning, then there's no point in planning because you need to get it done. So rather than allowing time to be something that's helpful to us, we view it more as something that drives us, that is pushing us forward, constantly pushing us. And so we come to these moments when we need to stop and slow down and focus and say it's okay to just do one thing at a time. There's no reason we have to do multiple things at a time. Right now with phones and texting, you have people in meetings that are having meetings and texting people, which, you know, you might as well make use of your time, right? But at the same time, why do we have this bent to do all these things at the same time? Even when we're at church, when we come in the morning, it gets so difficult to empty out what's been going on in our lives and to sit back and actually receive what God has for us. Because all the things that are going on in our lives, we can't kind of check them at the door. We tend to carry them all in with us wherever we're going. And so we end up thinking about, okay, what am I having for dinner when I get home? Did I set the roast high enough so it's going to be done when I get home? I've got that pile of laundry that needs to be done. I've got to finish this for tomorrow before I go to work. And, oh, I've got to call so-and-so back because they've been bugging me lately and I want to get that off out of the way. Just all these things that carry over. And it becomes very easy to do that because our society is so geared on getting things done, on being efficient, on doing it as the best that we can. And I guess by best, I really mean as fast as we can. Because we're more focused with the speed that we're going than necessarily on the quality of what we're doing. So we need to slow down, do one thing at a time, allow ourselves to feel God's presence and to feel Him working in our lives. So the last example that I wanted to look at comes from a devotion I get. It's through crosswalk.com, and they'll email you these devotions, which are great. The only problem is when you don't keep up with them, it tends to fill your inbox in really fast. And so this year, one of my New Year's resolutions is to keep up with them this year because they send you like 3 a day or something like that, I think is what it ends up being, which seems like a lot, but they're really short. So it's really not too bad. But the problem is I don't even keep up with one a day. So, but enough about me. This one is from John 13, and it's verses 3 through 15 of John 13. And so basically, I'm just going to read through what the article has to say because that's going to be the best way rather than me trying to paraphrase the whole thing. He starts off by saying, we talk about slowing down. We're going to back up in history here to a time that was, well, in theory, much slower. But if you look at different time phrases, different time periods throughout history, you'll find places where people of that time period will say, life is so fast, things are going, you know, it seems like I never have enough time. So I don't know if it's going to be a problem that plagues us our entire history or not, but anyway, it seems to be a slower time, so we'll just go with that. Israel can be a dusty place, and sandaled feet get filthy walking to and fro. In ancient times, a person entering a home removed his sandals and cleaned his feet. Or if the homeowners were wealthy, servants would do the washing. This distasteful but necessary task fell to the worker of lowest position in the household. Imagine the disciples' surprise when the Son of God put himself in the role of a lowly servant and knelt to wash their feet. The need for such a service was great, as they had been traveling for some time, but not one of them offered to do it. Jesus did more than fill a need. He offered an object lesson. As he explained, "I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you." That comes from John 13:15. Now, I'm going to put a little quotation, I guess, of my own around this next one, because he makes an assumption that I don't necessarily agree with here. But I'll read it because this is how he's got it written. "Some churches have incorrectly interpreted this as a command to make foot washing an ordinance." More of a high church thing, so take that as you will. That's not the part I want to focus on, even though I'm taking time to focus on it. Anyway, but it's possible to clean someone else's skin without contemplating the significance of Christ's actions. It's basically all he's saying is you can do a foot washing without actually focusing on what Christ was doing. But this last part is gets back to what I want to focus on. In fact, it's the act itself. The act itself is not the main point. Attitude is what counts. Jesus desires that we be willing to humble ourselves to serve others. He is looking for men and women who will ignore pride, position, power, and then I'm going to add in here time restraints, to do whatever must be done, wherever it needs doing, and for whoever requires assistance. So I'm going to read that last sentence one more time. He is looking for men and women who will ignore pride, position, power, and then I'm going to add in their time restraints, in order to do whatever must be done, wherever it needs doing, and for whoever requires assistance. So Jesus took time to show us this example of humbling himself to serve others, so that we in turn will humble ourselves and serve others. But it takes time to serve. And with the way our lives are running right now, when we're always out of time, we don't have time to help, we don't have time to serve, we really need to take a look at our lives and be able to step back. Let me read Ephesians 5:15-17 one more time. "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is." The Lord wants us to serve him and to serve others. The question is, how are we going to use our time to do that? What are we going to stop doing? What are we going to start doing? Where is our focus going to be? And even though for our society, our culture, the way we view time seems to be very precise, very moment by moment, we've got to be getting stuff done. I don't see the scripture saying that here. It says making the most of every moment. It's not saying make sure every second of every day you're hammering it. You're not wasting a second. It's making the most of every opportunity. Make sure that when something comes up, when God brings something in front of you, that you've got the time to say, you know what, this is important. I need to stop what I'm doing, back off a little bit, and I need to do what God wants me to do. I need to follow through and serve. Whatever that may be, however that may be, whoever it entails. But if we get so caught up on that, we've got to get there, we've got to be doing, we've got to be doing, we've got to be doing, we're going to burn out. Because we're going to be focusing on getting there fast, and we're going to be relying on ourselves rather than on God. If we can rely on God to give us the ability to do what needs to be done, we'll be able to do what he needs us to do. So I kind of like to leave off with a question as we go into this new year. How are we using our time? Are we putting God first? It's something we need to look at each day. And it's one of those things that each of us have to decide on our own whether we're going to stop and take time for God, or we're going to get caught up in that crazy busyness of life. In a moment here, Deanne's going to play that video one more time. When I came across that, I was just like, this is great. We could just play this and go home. But like I said, David said he was going to be here. So with Pastor being here, I thought, you know, we should probably do something in the middle to fill up the time. No.
Life moves fast. Sometimes I can't keep up. I can't think that fast. I can't be that productive. I try, though. I engulf myself in my work when life is busy enough. I stay so busy that I soon forget about you. God, I know I need to slow down. I know I can't keep up with this pressure, but day after day, I take things into my own hands only to see them fumble as I try and keep up. I probably need to slow down, need to give you the reins, but to be honest, I just don't trust you. Not enough anyway. Are you really that big? Can you really take the weight? And where do I let go? My life seems like a wheel is spinning, and I know that throwing something in the spokes will send me into a painful fall. I don't want to lose control. Control, what does that even look like? Every time I think I have it, life pulls away even faster at speeds that I can't register, and all I can think to do is just yell, stop! And so I do. And let you take it all.
Close in a word of prayer. Lord, help us to be able to stop, to be able to focus on you, and to turn to you in those times when things just seem like they're out of control. Help us to give you our time. Help us to focus on you, Lord. Because without you, regardless of how fast we're going or where we're headed, there's really no point. So give us the strength. Give us the ability to stay focused on you and to use our time wisely, Lord. We give you the rest of this day and the rest of this week and the rest of this new year, Lord. Remind us to stay focused on you and to use our time wisely. Amen.